Thank you, Chairperson. Let me first start by offer apologies for our Director General, Mr. Maxwell Saginya. He's meeting, amongst other things, a Dutch delegation today. We've got quite a substantial delegation, and I'll ask members to introduce, our officials to introduce themselves. I may stumble among some of all of the names. We've got, but from a DDG level, we've got our Chief Financial Officer, Ms. Tabiseng Funakubi, and the Acting DDG for Natural Water Resource Infrastructure, Ms. Andile Mate. I would ask them to introduce the members. And then Sistogo Sigwaza, which is the Chief Director for Institutional Oversight, dealing with all institutions.
I think my colleague was right that maybe people should introduce themselves. He has forgotten a very important CFO here sitting next to me, who is actually more directly involved with most of the entities. If you remember that we have a CFO now for the water trading entity, Mr. Faisal Ismail. I think from infrastructure, I can't see anyone from infrastructure, it's just myself here. However, we do have a rep that is representing infrastructure in the Kogwa Basin, Komati Basin Water Authority, which is the Kogwa. Mr. Mark Anthony, I think he's just walked out. He's sitting there. He is representing the department in that board. Thanks.
Other entities will introduce themselves and go to their presentations. We will then give the head of the delegation to just give an overview before we go directly to the entities. Mr. Mola?
Thank you, Chairperson. We've got a brief overview of the Water Research Commission and the TCTA, the Task Current and Tunnel Authority. And Mr. Guaza can give that you an overview later in the day when we get to the cash on management agencies this afternoon. We'll give another overview, short overview, about the operations of the CMAs. So we'll ask Togo Siguaza to lead us in this presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members of the Portfolio Committee and colleagues from the department and also from the sector. Chair, I will only introduce the Water Research Commission and the TCTA. I think the members are familiar with the Water Research Commission, that it was established in terms of the Water Research Act of 1971. That is, it is also one of our public entities accountable to the Minister of Water and Environmental Affairs. It is a water research a strategic organization that is helping us in terms of coordinating the water research in the country. And it has provided a lot of support in the sector in terms of the knowledge generation and creation, and also in terms of being the knowledge hub in terms of all water-related issues. And if you look at the, in terms of the financial performance, I think it has always done very well over the years. And it also received an unqualified audit report. In terms of the its governance, the minister appoints its board of directors, and we have here chairperson of the board, the professor who will be formally introduced during the presentation. We also have the new chief executive, Mr. Desigan Naidoo. This is his first appearance to the committee, and I'm sure you will have confidence in us that we have chosen the right person for the job. I will not, Chair, go to the key details because they will be going to their detailed strategic plan and also their annual report. But they have four focus areas in terms of their work, which is around water resource management, the water-linked ecosystems, water use and waste management, and also water utilization in agriculture. Recently, last year, they celebrated 40 years of their existence, which was a very good event. And remember that they also received the levy from the sector, and they will go into detail in terms of the levy that they have received. And there is also an excitement in the sector about them. They will be celebrating the introducing a book that will be talking about the history of the dams in South Africa. And we are looking forward to that event because it's going to be an educational session where they will be informing all of us of the sector about the history of the dams in South Africa. Chair, I will stop there about the Water Research Commission, and then I will go to TCTA. Or maybe I should go to TCTA after, before TCTA presents. Thank you, Chair.
We will then go straight to Water Research Commission, and they must tell us how much they spent during the celebration, which we are not invited.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, and honourable members of the committee. Thanks for allowing us to be here today. I'm Janine Adams, chairperson of the board. And as Toko said, we have our new CEO, Desigan Naidoo, here with us. We have our CFO, Naresh Patel, and our communications officer, Shlingiwe Tele. And then we have one of our new appointments with us as well, Dr. Inga Jacobs, sitting there at the back, dealing with knowledge dissemination. So thank you. I'll hand directly over to the CEO for the presentation.
Good morning, Chair, good morning, members of the committee, and good morning, colleagues from Water Affairs and TCTA and COPWA. And thank you very much for the opportunity to talk to you this morning. I just want to ensure that you received the documentation that we've sent in advance. We've sent a pack of the business plan for this financial year that we've just started, the five-year strategy plan, as well as the annual reports for the year 2010-11, as well as the highlights package. And in addition to that, we also distributed the presentation in advance. There's been one amendment to one slide, but I'll point that out to you shortly. Here to begin with, you will find something like this on your table. And I'm not sure if the chair has one on his table. Do you? You didn't get invited to the function, and we're not giving you cheese. There's a good reason why we put this on your table. When we talk about the notion of water scarcity and water shortage and water wastage, we have some very particular pictures in mind, but we don't really internalize how we use water in our daily life. What you have in front of you is 100 grams of cheese. It's not a lot. It's probably a good portion if you're on a good diet. But it's safe to eat. The point we want to make is less than a declarable amount. So the thing we want to point out is this 100 grams of cheese takes 500 liters of water to make. Really. This is half a kiloliter of water that you're holding in your hand. And there's a little description on the tag that tells you the different kinds of water that are used in order to make this and what goes into it. So I think we must be cognizant of the nature of scarcity and how we all contribute in what we do in our daily lives on an ordinary basis and how we use water. Chair, with your permission, I'd like to go into the presentation. And the first thing to talk about is the WRC very briefly. That this is a fairly unique model in the world. There are only about 12 organizations of a similar structure that has a dedicated national agency that concentrates on water research. The second point of uniqueness is that this agency is funded by the sector. It doesn't operate on a parliamentary grant like many of the other state entities. The sector, through a system of levies and water charges, funds its R&D. Indeed, last year was the year in which the WRC was 40 years old. This is the 41st year, and it's quite fitting that it is the year of the decade. And we're hoping to do some very adventurous things around assisting the water sector. And we can also point out that in the surveys that we've done thus far, is that the WRC is indeed a premier water knowledge agency. It funds approximately 50% of all the water research that's done in South Africa, and in the case of agriculture, some 70% in the sector, which is a fairly major play. But we want to go to different places. I mean, one of the key things, and this has been spoken about by many members of Cabinet, including the Minister of Water, as well as the Minister of Science and Technology, in that collecting knowledge for its own sake is an interesting enterprise, but what the public invests in is an ability to take that knowledge and use it in a way that makes a difference to people's lives and to develop the economy. And what you see in front of you is something we call the knowledge tree, and this is our intent for the next 5 years. We want to use the knowledge generated by the WRC to contribute to sustainable development solutions, to inform policy and decision-making much more vividly, to provide new products and services for economic development, to use this as a mechanism to develop human capital in the water sector as well as the science and technology sector. And the work of the WRC must very directly be seen to empower communities and to contribute to transformation and redress in the South African environment. And in this plan, the WRC Business Plan 2012-13, we describe how that's going to be done this year. And in the five-year strategy, we provide the narrative over the five-year period as well. Just a quick breakdown of some of those issues. One, the issue of human capital development in the water and science sector. I think it's clear to all of us, and this has come up in many, many discussions over the past few years, that one of the biggest crises we face in the water sector currently in South Africa is a lack of capacity at all levels of the system. At the level of water managers, at the level of water professionals, at the level of water knowledge workers. So through the WRC project, we're seeking to develop capacity via various means. Through the postgraduate student support, and we have a very good record in this area, and we want to do even more things. Developing research leadership and research leaders, particularly from marginalized and underrepresented groups, and I'll talk about this in another slide later. But in addition to those traditional domains, we also want to use our projects to develop water entrepreneurs and innovators, because we need to organize to generate knowledge, but get that knowledge into the form that can be used directly by communities and by the economy. And this is about stuff related to intellectual property, but also innovation not related to intellectual property, and the extending of community empowerment through the R&D projects. Some of the new products and services that we're looking at, and this is an example of one, is in the agricultural sector, the WRC has developed a water administration system that has the ability to save, and this is the Valhalla stat, 17.5 million cubic meters of water in 1 year alone through a better agricultural irrigation management procedure. We're also wanting to invest more heavily in the technology domain, and here we're talking about the use of satellite imagery for land use planning, monitoring of land use, and this is very important in the licensing and the compliance of the licensing domain. And one of the methodologies that South Africa has developed through the WRC projects around reserve determination through a building block methodology, which is the core of a new book that is going to be launched later this year, is now one of the premier technologies of choice to be used anywhere in the world. So it's not about serving only the South African domain, it's also about global leadership. In the domain of empowerment of communities, our projects must convert subjects of research into beneficiaries of research. You know, there was a statistic that was put out in the Lancet a couple of years ago about health research in Khayelitsha. And someone said that if they took all the money they used to do health research in Khayelitsha and actually built health services, we'd have a fantastic health system in Khayelitsha. And this is true of so many places in the world. So what we want to do is to organize the design of our projects to leave a legacy in each of those areas. On the issue of transformation and redress, we're putting a lot more effort to bring previous marginalized institutions into the WRC portfolio. And the picture you see is the University of Fort Hare, which many of the members will recognize. Chair, around the sustainable development solutions, it doesn't help us to be barking from the outside and telling some people how badly they behave. The mining sector in this country and the mining sector in many countries in the world, perhaps all, are huge culprits when it comes to environmental issues and water issues and water scarcity issues. They have a long reputation of using more water than they need, both in the form of abstraction as well as discharging their waste into the system. Now, the new paradigm that we want to look at is hold hands with the partners in industry and provide the right kind of support to help them to be better corporate citizens. And this is another example of that. And this is a guidance document for cleaner production in mining in South Africa with regards to water. And in this domain, the WRC has over time produced 80 such reports just on the mining sector. We want to continue in this trend. So, Chair, some quick highlights for the financial year that has just passed. The total number of projects that were completed, that were engaged in the 2011-12 year was 322. The active projects in that domain were 258, which is a pretty healthy number. The number of new projects that we were able to garner is 74. And you'll see that the number may well drop with time. And the reason is that we're moving from single project support intervention into combining projects so that they can have a program approach. Because if we go one by one by one, we don't produce a building narrative. And what we want to have is a multiplier effect. We also want to have some research concentration. The number of finalized projects has jumped up quite radically from 76 to 96, and a lot of this is dealing with the backlog that has been there for a while. And the number of projects that went out on directed calls was 101. Now, let me explain what this means. The WRC works on two modalities. One, it puts out an open call. So anyone in the research sector can put in a proposal around the things that are interesting for them. This is very important to do. This is where the new ideas come from. This is where the challenges that we haven't even thought about yet come from. This is why we invest in academia. But there are several things that this country wants to do. It has a national strategy. It has a set of government priorities. And those are encapsulated in this thing called the solicited project. We say this is the domain that we want folk to look at. We want to generate knowledge in this domain, and we want to generate human capital development in this domain, and this has become a very big part of our portfolio. Chair, I want to emphasize just one aspect around a lot of this. And the annual report for this financial year will go into a lot more detail around some of the other issues. And this is around the human capital development. What the WRC has done over time is over the past 5 years, we've been able to support some 3,000 students. And the student demographic, as you can see, is 42% female, 58% male. But maybe the more interesting graph is the one that's next to it. And I hope you can see in that graph is that we have a considerable majority of the funding associated with previously disadvantaged individuals. And this is something we want to emphasize increasingly. Look, overall, we want to increase the support to everybody. But we have a particular transformation objective, and that transformation objective demands that we have this kind of proportions. And we've been doing fairly well in this domain as far as the students are concerned. You can also see from this graph which kinds of students are being supported by the WRC projects, and they're primarily in the postgraduate domain, the majority being master's students, followed by doctorate students, and then followed by other students, and then we have some support for other people in the system. This is not because we think the other folk are not important. Of course they are. But the contribution that we make in the domain that the WRC works is in the postgraduate domain, and we've been able to do very, very well in this context. The second issue that we want to emphasize is, although the majority of the students that are supported in the WRC projects are South African, we are starting to make fairly considerable inroads into becoming an international training center. So it wouldn't surprise you to see that the second biggest cohort of people that are supported by WRC projects are from SADC. And this is empowering things like the SADC Free Movement Protocol. It's supporting things like the declaration of the Southern African Ministers' Council on Science and Technology. And this is a very real enunciation of the development of a system around us, very much in line with South Africa's foreign policy. It's pleasing for us to also note that there are folk outside SADC from elsewhere in Africa and people outside Africa who also are involved in the WRC project. The paradigm of knowledge generation in the world today is around partnership, after all. Here we can see the differentiation in the WRC projects between the designated groups of students as opposed to the undesignated group. And we feel that that proportion is fairly healthy. And this is what we want to continue into the future. Clearly we want to increase the number of students, but we want to carry the proportion in a similar way. Chair, a quick note on the financials, and pointing out very strongly that these are mostly reconciled financials, but the reconciled financials goes to the Auditor General only at the end of May, because our financial year ends at the end of March, at which point the full process of the audit continues. Our income for the 12 months ended the 31st of March came, the majority fund comes from the levies, from the water sector, and these are the water use charges. In addition to that, we've had some rollover funds from the previous financial year that we've been able to put to some good use. We have a fairly healthy and increasing leverage fund. Leverage fund is where we're able to win funds from other bodies like donors and trusts and international partnerships, and we've managed to bring that up to 19.5 million in the last financial year, and we have ambitions to make that even larger at this point in time, and then we have some other income from other sources as well. The point of the matter has to be that the levy system that comes out of primarily the water boards and the Department of Water Affairs must be leveraged to get more income into the system, and we're starting to be able to do that. If we go into the expenditure statement for the last financial year, what we see here is that the bulk of the funds goes directly into dispersed research funding into the projects, and these are universities, public research agencies, including big science councils like the CSIR and the ARC, many, many players in the private sector. In fact, we have a very healthy 60-40 ratio. And the thing that I think that we can be quite proud of is that we have the highest proportion of SMMEs participating in research compared to any other public financing agency with regards to R&D. This is a very good thing. We're starting to build a base that we're all going to be benefiting from enormously in the next few years to come. The second highest cost we have on our system is our HR cost. It's much, much lower than the research funding. And the reason for this is that the operational modality of the WRC is that we don't have fund managers. We have fund managers who are also resident experts in these fields, and we invest in that expertise. This is what enables us to organize it, and no other research entity that funds research in South Africa can claim this. There is a WRC report for every single WRC project, and it is available free of charge to any member of the public at any point in time, all of the time. And the easiest way to access this is to go onto the WRC website, you register on a thing called the Knowledge Hub, and you're able to download all of that. So this is a genuine public service. And then we have the usual other expenditures associated with any entity existing, we have capex costs and we have running costs and we have some corporate expenses, etc. And then, Chair, with your permission, I'd like to move on and talk about some of the highlights that we're looking at for the financial year that we've just started. Now, one of the big things that we started in 2012, and we launched this during the Water Week, which was in March, so it was technically in the last financial year, but the Water Week was the right place to launch this, is a study called WR 2012. It would take us about 3 or 4 years to complete. And what this is in accordance with the National Water Resources Strategy and in support of the Minister of Water Affairs and Environment, is the National Water Resources Strategy demands a regular update on the state of water and water availability in the country. And this is the follow-up report from the 2002 report. And there are going to be some differences around this one. What this computes is the water availability in the system. It also makes a projection based on the current demand behaviors on what the availability is going to be, if you like, the supply-demand balance. Now, there's some interesting numbers that have come out of the last one. The 2002 one said that the supply-demand balance had very little fat in the system. But we also had several behavior changes and several new best practice regimens operating in various of our fields. We have the benefit of a water conservation and demand management program that runs out of the Department of Water Affairs. We have the benefit of a water footprints program where volunteer companies have now computed their water footprints and are developing things like a water budget for industry. And all of these things should be making a difference in the system. But the most important thing to emphasize around this is that accessibility of this report. This report is not going to be just a document like this. It is going to be an internet-based interactive tool where people can download very real information either for their sector or for their locality to do very real planning. This is not just a planning tool for national government. This is a planning tool for everybody. Here we will continue to play very prominently in the water supply and sanitation domain, and many of you will know that the Minister of Water, in her opening address to the Water Institute for Southern Africa Congress yesterday, talked about the MDG targets, she talked about the blue drop and green drop status of the country, and she talked about a continuing need for more and more innovative solutions around water supply and sanitation, and we are happy to continue to play in this space very prominently. And there are many, many projects that you will see inside our portfolio that address this very squarely. Another issue to emphasize is the issue of governance. We're going into a domain where there's going to be a review of the whole suite of legislation around water. And in this domain, we're going to be seeing an amendment to the Water Research Act. We're going to be seeing possible amendments to the Water Services Act and the National Water Act. And we're having a big governance debate around water in this country right now. Okay, the minister has just declared that there will now be 9 water management areas, for example. And this governance project, which we want to take forward, is around examining options for governance so that we can find the right kind of toolbox that allows us to implement this key principle of subsidiarity that is in the National Water Act. It's about how to organize, to optimize the power base at the lowest levels of the system so that we have fluent management of water throughout the system. So governance is something that's very big on our radar, and later on in the year, in November, we're going to be hosting an international conference on water governance in South Africa. And we're hoping that the Portfolio Committee and members of Parliament will also participate in that process, and we'll give you a briefing about that at your convenience. Sustainable development is key. It is official policy in this country. It does very well in policy arena. The problem is we don't have a sufficient expression of this at where the tie hits the tarmac. And what we want to do increasingly in the WRC's work is to organize for ourselves to examine very closely this notion of ecosystem protection but also around organizing for livelihood opportunities that come out of this. And this is an example of a product that's just come out, and it's going to go into its second phase in the new business plan, and this is around fresh water in the country, and we published a freshwater atlas together with various partners in the system, including SANBI and CSIR and many universities. And it's about examining this issue in much more detail. It's about organizing for a practical set of protocols around how we can achieve the green agenda as well as the economic agenda at the same time. Welcome, Maxwell. Then, just to emphasize some points that I think we don't think about enough. These two projects that I've demonstrated are very interesting. This is about demonstrating the water-energy nexus that has been underexplored. On the right-hand side is a picture of a mini hydro pump. Well, for that scale, it's a micro hydro pump. That's sitting on the top of one of the water reservoirs. You see many around the city, as you will see in most towns and cities in this country. What you have in a water storage tank is a head of water that's sitting with energy. What we're doing here is harvesting that energy. So what is calculated, and this is a demonstrator plant in the city of Chuane, and Chuane wants to go into a major demonstration on this and exploit it elsewhere. We have calculated that if we put these kinds of structures only in the six metros, and running for only 6 hours a day, we will have another 22,000 megawatts of electricity that's available inside the system. Currently, it is being stored in the top of the water tanks. Micro hydro could be one of the next things. We also have projects in this new period that's examining the use of turbines in the larger diameter pipes that we have. It requires very specialized technology where we will be able to harvest the energy that runs through the system as well. The one on the left is something that we hope to show you as soon as you're available to have this workshop that we've asked you for. And this is a project in Cape Town. It's a project off the coast of Simonstown. It's not far off the coastline, about 60 meters out from the beach. And this is a very simplified, virtually non-destructible, everything's eventually destructible, but virtually non-destructible, very low maintenance wave power harvester. And it's being used to do a very interesting thing. The energy that comes out of this wave power harvester is used to power a desalination plant on the shore to provide desalinated, very clean water to a local, very poor community. This is a very important demonstration. And this falls into the realm of the kind of stuff that WRC is very keen on engaging around real empowerment for people. We are also looking at a much broader portfolio of work around the water nexus with energy and with food security. And we're doing this with a few very big partners. The WWF is one of them, and the Economic Development Department is another one of them. Don't worry about what the graph says. It's a little bit complicated. But what we want to emphasize here is this challenge that we're looking at around acid mine water is not a solved problem. We have a set of emergency interventions around some crisis basins currently, and we're using certain technologies around it. But there's a huge amount of unexplored science that we're starting to invest in that are going to give us better solutions around this thing and more sustainable solutions and hopefully lower cost solutions. We're also looking at turning this paradigm in the context of an understanding of the Chinese word for crisis, which is wei ji, I believe. I will be corrected if I'm wrong, where the word actually means that a crisis is a combination of danger and opportunity, and we want to find the opportunity in this. Because acid mine water, like any other polluted water, is a source of water. You need the right scientific and technological basis on which to harvest it, and this is what we want to invest in. What is in that graph is an example of this. That this is a technology that was developed out of a WRC project using freezing technology as a means to clean up polluted water, heavily polluted water, in this case acid mine water, And this technology has now been submitted to the Technology Innovation Agency, where the products of their research are being looked at as a possibility of developing a new technological platform to take this forward. And we're working together with TIA, and the IDC is also involved. And we want to see more and more of this happening in the chain. That the R&D products that come out of a WRC project get the right kinds of support by other players into the system so that you can have this flow through into the real economy and dealing with the thing that the science and technology folk call the innovation cap. And let me move on to the empowerment of communities. What you will see in the WRC portfolio and when you go onto the Knowledge Hub is a plethora of products that are designed to help people to start from an almost zero base into some level of productivity. And a lot of this is in the agricultural domain. And these are two examples around that. Another example that I didn't carry a slide on, but you would probably have picked up from the press, is that earlier in the year, also during Water Week, we handed over a product to the Department of Agriculture, Forestry, and Fisheries. And this is around developing inland aquaculture as a major activity in South Africa. How to convert some of the inland dams into a place that produces nutritional and food security inside the system. And the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries have a strategy on how to proliferate this, and we want to do more of that. So the last example that I want to talk about is this one, and it's a very special one. What we have in this country are a couple of million people who are sitting outside not only the grid, but also the possibility of the grid. Because the last mile connection, whether it's water reticulation or the extension of the electricity grid to get power to them, in someone's calculation, does not meet the cost-benefit ratio. So what we're investing in now is to try and develop off-grid solutions. And this is a really good example of one of them. This is a little community in a village called Okombe in the Drakensberg area. It's a largely pastoral community with a little bit of crop agriculture. And what we have invested there is a combined solution using a biodigester, using the manure from the animals, to provide a power source. And because the power source requires water, we've invested in rainwater harvesting. And this combined solution has produced a sustainable solution for this village. We have done this with a different characterization also in Tabanchu, and there are many players that are quite interested now in replicating this in a number of spaces. And we're hoping to upgrade this as one of the key green economy projects as part of the new growth path. In fact, there are places in the world where this has worked so well that eventually people have extended the circulation not to supply electricity to these areas, but actually to harvest from these areas. I mean, there are groups of villages in India, for example, using concentrated solar power that actually sell their power back into the main grid. And we want to look at some of that. A few slides to conclude. This is a very important one. I showed you some impressive slides about our ratios associated with the students, where we are quite rightly organizing the support, and we have a very successful record in this, PDR students. When you flip that ratio around, and when you examine the cadre of research leaders in the system, it is the opposite. They're predominantly it's white research leaders, which has its own crisis because generally they're in the older category. sorry, this is not in your pack. I will make sure that you do. I apologize for that. And what we have here is an underrepresentation of the PDI project leaders. What we want to do is to organize an initiative, and we've started with this already. We've started with four projects in this year to develop an expanded cadre of black and women research leaders in the system. And to do this, we've designed a special program around short-term projects which has mentorship. Because, you know, the bottom line is this, is that for 17 years, we've been explaining to people why there are no people in the system. And the next year we give them the same explanation. And the next year we give them the same explanation. We have to stop somewhere. We have to cut the circle, pull it up into a spiral. And this is a way to do it. So we organize for people to have a softer approach and a softer entry into the system. They have the short-term project for a year or so. They have good mentorship, and then they can go into the mainstream program. Now, a process around funding this has already begun. We have had our discussions with the Department of National Water Affairs. We've had our discussions with National Treasury. The minister has offered her endorsement of this idea to the Minister of Finance, and we'll have to see where we go with this process around financing. But this is a crux initiative around the transformation of the sector. A quick look at the financials for the three-year MTEF ahead, and what we have here is how we want to use the funds that we have available to us, the $183 million, in the 2012-13 financial year. And the distribution is in a lot more detail, of course, in the business plan. It tells you exactly what we're doing with it. And we put in some fairly optimistic projections around year two and year three. But we are not recipients of a parliamentary grant with a three-year baseline. We are a year-to-year funded organization. But this is a combination of what the history has told us and some of our ambitions into the future. And our idea is that in 2 years, at the end of this NCF period, we should be a 200 million rand organization, which I think is a very modest target. This talks to the income split. Around what we expect to see, and here again the bulk will be the levies, and what we're wanting to do is once again make sure that most of the funds that we receive goes directly into the research enterprise. Chair, as always, I'm doing the presentation, but I'm doing it on behalf of a lot of good-looking people. This is a look at the majority of the members of the WRC team, and at some point in the not-too-distant future, we'd like to host you in exactly that venue where we can talk about many of these issues in detail. So that's the presentation I'd like to offer, and we'd like to get into the discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think our presentation was very much clear. I'm tempted to agree with the lady there that they have appointed the right person. DG, welcome to the meeting. I will then open for comments, questions, and clarifications from the honourable members. I think we must give you a round of applause. Everybody's happy. Thanks very much.
You've stated that there's a huge lack in capacity at all levels. Yet there are 3,000 students that have been accommodated and funded. Where are those students if the capacity is not filtering through?
Okay. If you can tell us in terms of your provincial spread in assisting students. Because we are afraid that maybe you might only concentrate on urban areas when there are needy rural poor people out there.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for that question. On the issue of the capacity, this is something that is a much bigger issue than our organization. And what we're looking at, in fact, the WRC is also assisting in this regard, is to help to develop what the broader-based strategy should be. There are some domains, the minority domain that we will address, which is the postgraduate student. But the postgraduate students don't go on to be practitioners in the system. The postgraduate students follow either high-tech careers or academic careers. And this is where they go to. They don't automatically go to become the engineers at municipal level, which is one of the gap areas. They don't automatically go to be the administrators of water. we're starting to devise now is a constructed composite strategy, so we will know where each part of the system has to provide what it needs to in a collective narrative. This has a few places to go before it is finalized. What exactly happens to each of the students is something that I'm also very curious about. And one of the things that we want to do in this year is to start a tracer mechanism. We want to do some backtracing of the students that come out of the system. I can point to one, though. Right next to me is the chair of the WRC board, who started off as a student supported by a WRC project. Well, we know what happened to one of them. They went on to become the chair of the WRC board. And there are very many prominent researchers in the system. But the tracer study would help us greatly, and we do need to follow this up. The issue around the provincial distribution, it's not as easy a question to answer as I discovered because I went to interrogate this. What we collect as the data is where the students are registered. And where the students are registered does not give you an indication generally of where they come from, because we now live in a free country chair. If you live in Limpopo, you can study in KwaZulu-Natal, no problem. So what we have in a lot of detail is a listing of the institutions that where the students are registered, and that distribution is across the provinces that currently have the universities. It excludes two, because two provinces do not have universities. But having said that, the anecdotal evidence is telling us that there are a fair number of Mpumalanga students that are in UKZN, and there are a fair number of Northern Cape students that are at UWC. So there's some measure of distribution around it. But the actual origin location, we don't know. We also don't know whether or not the students go back to where they came from. I think the story that we know in so many other sectors is that they probably don't. Sorry, that's not a complete answer, but that's as much as we know for now.
I don't think I'm satisfied with your answer. Because as you are able to concentrate on blacks and women, how are you not able to check as to whether other provinces are also to be taken care of? Like I've said, that in deep rural areas, you've got Catholic people, but we are not able to reach them. And they don't have any means of communication. They depend on radios. They don't have print media or what other sources of information. So we need to make sure that we do reach those people. I mean, even if you are targeting these institutions where people are registering, but we have to make sure that you verify the origins of those people so that you are able to cover the whole country. And mostly the needy people who have been disadvantaged before. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just to add on what the Chairperson has said, I also like to know whether you only focusing on universities, because you know that there are FT colleges, even in the rural areas, they are there, but we don't mention anything about them. Thank you.
Chair, you're absolutely right. And I'm hoping that by the time that we sit at the workshop, we can give you much more data about this, because it's something that we're looking at. The problem is that this data has not been collected before. So going on from now with our new string of projects, we will have the data. So we put some new compulsory fields in our proposals where we're going to collect this data. But the historical data we'd have to manually sift out and do some tracer studies. I agree with you completely that this is very important to them. It actually is. And it's also important to know what happens to the folk when they go out. We have a much better idea around the distribution of the projects as opposed to the students. And that's pretty good. But there are other issues around that as well, because in the rural provinces, it's predominantly agriculture projects, and predominantly the industrial and economic development projects are in the urban centers. That kind of data we do have and will be in the annual report. But the issue around the students is something that we must trace. The issue around the APT colleges, no, we hardly ever deal in that domain because the nature of the work of the WRC is research and development, and the research and development players in the higher education sector are the universities, all the universities, the traditional universities and the universities of technology. But that's the primary base. So all of the students that you see at bachelor's degrees and BTEC degrees, for example, are also in the traditional universities. So FET colleges are not quite in the domain that we work in. But the strategy that I told you about around developing the sector HCD strategy does engage with those issues. And it's early stages, but it's starting to have a blueprint. And at some point, I'm sure that the Department of Water Affairs will give you a comprehensive presentation on the overall strategy.
Thank you very much. The Norway for Water, Charlie, you want to say something?
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just like to know your WRC for this empowerment of the community, because you indicated for some the project performance. So I'd like to know how does this empowerment for community get a guideline participate for your project? Because your project finalized only 96 from the, I think from 76 is increase in the, is improvement. But I want to know is how you empowerment actually for the community can participate for your project. And regarding for the job creation, I'd like to know. Thank you.
Thank you for that question. There are a few modalities that we use. The one that is the soundest modality is where the project is co-developed with the recipient community. And where that happens, all of these parameters are built in up front. And let me give you an example, a non-agriculture example of that. The non-agriculture example of that is recently in the Eastern Cape, we launched the completion of the first pilot around sanitation in schools. And 400 schools were included in that. This is a very big partnership. It was the WRC with the Water Affairs Department, with Irish Aid, and the Eastern Cape Department of Education. The way this was designed is to have these interventions, novel interventions around sanitation solutions in these schools, but the manner of the implementation was to create local entrepreneurs. So it was actually an innovation project. And what has been left behind from the project is one, the sustainability element. The reason we chose that as a site is that the Department of Education, the Eastern Cape, gave the guarantee that after the pilot was complete, they would proliferate that to the rest of the province, and that has now started. And the second is that we've left behind these entrepreneurs, and there are about 50 of them, who are now able to apply their skills in the continuation of that project and other projects. They don't only have to do this for the schools, they can do it for anyone else. And they can. So there are little companies that have been formed that are now able to go with this. And the third is 400 schools have had sanitation. So that is the kind of design that we really like to have. But then we also have several projects that have been completed in the WRC, which are clearly going to be useful for people. And for example, water guidelines for homestead gardening, where a poor person, whether you live in a rural environment or an urban environment, with this guideline has the opportunity to at least have some subsistence level of agriculture going. And what we then invest in, we have a knowledge management division inside the WRC that takes this thing and says, how can we now use this in the real setting? And it works to proliferate this using usually community-based organizations to get the information in the toolbox out there and usually an implementation partner associated with that. So what I'm putting out is that
even where the design wasn't originally there, there are still things we can do post a project to make sure that it's applied inside the community and make a real difference to people's lives. If it goes to the extent of actually providing an economic opportunity of building a business or creating a job, so much the better.
Thank you once more. If I can introduce the delegation from TCTA. As we know, the TCTA was established around 1986 and as a special purpose vehicle. It has assisted the department and the sector with looking for funds in the market and also of budget, mainly of budget funding. And during the years, it has grown and it has proved itself in terms of credit rating in the country, and we have seen it accessing more markets due to its credit rating in the sector. Chair, I should apologize that the chairperson is not here. I know how you feel about that, the chairperson and the chief executive. But they did send an apology, Chair, to the Secretariat because they had to be in Ethiopia to attend the Water Economic, World Economic Forum. And unfortunately, the Deputy Chairperson is also running late, Mr. Mkondlo. But we have here the senior executives from the TCTA under the leadership of Ms. Jeanette Ndlapho, who is the Chief Operations Officer, and also she is the Acting Chief Executive. Chairperson, if you can allow them to continue with the presentation.
Chair, he's on his way. His plane was delayed, so he will be in any minute.
I'm not sure whether you're inviting me to comment on this issue. Okay. First of all, let me extend the greetings to Chair and the committees. Due to other commitments, I couldn't be here earlier. There are other engagements, but I thought I'd use the time in between. I didn't expect to be caught in crossfire, but in the nature of my duty, I am aware that the Chief Director of Institutional Oversight has been engaging with you, with the water boards which were here, on the issue of representation. There is nothing I can say. The rules established here, the expectation is that there should be that representation. I do know when something like this happened with the water board, the chair expressed a very strong views. It's just to indicate and put it in strong terms that you are indicating, Chair, that I the situation like that should not have arisen. However, it's your discretion to accept or not to accept the apology or postpone. I don't know when the Deputy Chair will arrive shortly, whether that will satisfy yourselves. I'm sure you've got other entities which are here. So, Chair, it's your discretion to either bring the other entities or to allow them to continue and express the strong feelings even when the Deputy Chair is here, but on behalf of the department on our oversight responsibility, I know the entity would organize that representation and attendance, but let me apologize for the embarrassment.
Thank you.
let me get guidance from the members as to whether must we continue with this CTA of the Ghana entity.
which is the project that COPA is mandated to develop actually. This is a Rikopis Dam. You can see it sitting in South Africa but extending a bit into Swaziland. And then the next dam is Mabuga Dam. So this was phase 1A and this is phase 1B. But you can see the greens, which are now other potential development projects. That's why it's called phase 1A. COPA was established to manage the project phase 1A, just these two dams. But there are other potential areas which are yet again to be developed, but that will depend if the mandate is given by the member states, that the Republic of South Africa and the Kingdom of Swaziland. So based on that, I can say that COPA did not participate in the whole development circle of the water resource development, from the planning at catchment level to do the reconciliation of water availability and demand requirement, coming to planning and even feasibility study to identify those projects that have just shown the other figure. That was done at a different level by the member states. COPA only came in to start at the level of design, construct, and operate those two dams as the project. And the one in grey has been done, has been completed. This started in 1992, so the design and construction of the two dams is over. Now most of the work that COPA is involved has been is actually the operation and the maintenance of those two dams. Related to that, then, COPA is to manage the distribution of water to the two states. COPA operates in a manner that it has got two members, that is the South Africa and the Kingdom of Swaziland. It does not follow to know exactly how water is distributed in the country. It is to serve the two countries, and that is what it is mandated to do. Then another component which is also key is the project finance management. I'll show you about five loans or five departments, different funding organizations are involved, and COPA is to manage it because this loan is still huge, it's still supposed to be managed, so that's another component which COPA has got to manage besides the other operational and overhead financing. And then there is settlement and compensation and also the environmental impact assessment. These are impacts which are normally come with such a project, and maybe I should have mentioned earlier that the main objective of this project, first of all, was to increase the assurance of supply to the users, because there are already users there, largely commercial farmers, but because of no storage, water cannot be managed, so they could only get water when it's available, otherwise it runs into the ocean. So the dam was to come and reduce the risk or increase the assurance of supply for these established or allocated commercial farmers. Next to that was now to also provide some more water, specifically for poverty eradication. So the extra water which came besides the increasing assurance of supply was now to help eradicate or mitigate poverty in that area, and that was largely reserved for the black emerging farmers. So that's where it comes with this resettlement. Besides that, we had also people who are disturbed by this project to be moved where the dam was and also where the reservoir was going to sit. So that resettlement disturbs the people, the population, and also the environment. And COPA was also mandated to make sure that resettlement is smooth with the spirit that everybody has got to be a winner. Everybody has got to come better off. Instead of just having water, and then the people who are there end up being poor and supply water to other places. The environment is also another component which has got to be managed carefully, so that's also what COPA is concentrating on. And then the other function I'm saying is the overall administration and management of the project, the people, and also the planning of the purpose. So just to show some of the projects, the first one is the Rikopis Dam, which is in South Africa. It has got a capacity of about 250 million cubic meters. Then the next one is the Mabuga one, which I said is situated in Swaziland. It has got a capacity of 332 million cubic meters. But the operation is done as if it were a system. When you compare
combine the two instead of operating each as a standalone dam, we find that there is a large chance of increasing the yield from that system, and that's what happens. You find that one dam, the way it's situated, there's a lot of preparation. Sometimes you find that water, one dam is full, is spilling, wasting water, another is empty. So it's a matter of trying to make sure that it's operated as a system to pull in that system where you see that it's likely to lose water through spillage. These are the loans which I say that in themselves, that there are five different funding banks or entities. You can see the dates for completion are different, and maybe even the terms are different. So just management of these loans itself, which totals to about 1.6 billion in itself, is a mission. So that's another element which I say that besides the management of the water and the infrastructure, this loan management is also a major component where COPA has got actually to deal with. Then this is what I say now, the other component where COPA has got to function, where I say, first of all, COPA is likely for irrigation water supply. And you can see the one which was existing, which I said was there, but the risk was high, or the assurance was low. In South Africa was about 20 hectares, in Switzerland was about 13,500 hectares, totaling to about 3,500 hectares. That was existing then, but the problem was the assurance, the level of assurance was low. And this is the new water or hectare that was created because of the water, which is total about 16,000 hectares with 10 in South Africa and 6 in Switzerland. So this one irrigation is largely for poverty eradication, whereas the top one may be actually for largely for commercial farmers. And I'm just putting there some of the figures which show the difference that for the existing one, it was found, through some research has been found that it increased by about 102 billion per annum, whereas the new project, if they are properly managed, that is the estimated income that they can bring in a year. Besides this agriculture, there is also a supply to domestic water. The rural area is quite a rural area place. It doesn't have much of reticulated water, so there is also water supply to those areas. So these are the main functions I can say COBA is actually concentrating on. And because of what I have said, that COBA is a bilateral authority, this is how it is actually governed and reporting. This is COBA. COBA, we are down here. COBA has got a board of six members, actually seven, where we have three members from each member state, three from South Africa, three from Switzerland, and then CEO is the seventh member that are responsible for the management of COBA. But because of COBA, how it sits, reporting to the two countries, we have a joint water commission. That is to whom COBA reports. The joint water commission has also got six members, three from Switzerland and three from South Africa, and those are the ones now who report directly to the minister in South Africa and the minister of the DG in South Africa and then also in Switzerland. So that is how it operates because of its nature having to serve two countries. And the structure of the executive management, there is the CEO, and then he has got four deputies. Actually, it has been three. There are three. The water manager, the corporate support manager, environment and resettlement, and then this is a new one which has been created just through the observation that it will improve the efficiency and because of the money that we find that's an important component. So we are trying to see if we can improve the efficiency. We created this function only this year. We are in the process of recruiting the financial manager. So that's the background, just to put in perspective how COBA is, who is its objective and mandate, and just to show some last year's performance indicators. I'll start with this one, which is a water purification plant. As I said, that with such a project, it involves quite a number of disturbance of movement of communities. So a number of communities who are moved. And I must say that in this area, especially in South Africa, we have had some challenge for quite some time. When they were moved, the land they were moved into, they had some land claim. So we found that these people cannot actually be confirmed to stay there permanent. So they are on temporary waiting until land which has not been claimed actually is established. So even if we had good working reticulation plan of water, you find that it can't work because where they are, the land permission has been paid to them, but they can't expire. So these are some of the projects which we are having. This is what you call the water purification plant established, in that those people are there, but they can be moved. But it is a complete plant, total package, we call it, in that has water purification. Because the place which is highly settled, so you find that if you have just got to supply, you are going to get, continue getting water from rivers or groundwater, for the chance of having contaminated water is very high. So we have three of these which were supposed to be done last year. One has been completed, it's operational. One has also been completed, only that is waiting the installation of power by ESCOM. ESCOM has got to extend power to that particular plant. So COPO has finished the construction, but the plant is yet to be operational because of COPO, because of ESCOM has got to connect with power there. The third one, it hasn't been finished because of the problem I already indicated before. There's some disputes now among the communities, so COPO is waiting. Once that dispute is solved, then it should establish it. The other main project also that COPO did last year was the sedimentation survey for the precocies. As you know, sedimentation is one of is the main determiner of the lifespan of a dam. In our own country, you may be aware of the wet bandar on the Caledon River, a dam which lost 87% of its capacity in just 7 years after commissioning, such that the dam actually is now left as a weir. It's no longer acting as a storage dam. So we find that this area, this catchment, is well settled into. So we are going to keep making these surveys to know at what rate are we losing our capacity, if any, so that we can also try to come up with other interventions that can help in preventing the sedimentation or those of the capacity of the dams. So this happened for one of the dams, the Tricopis, which was the first one for COPO. In areas where there isn't much settlement, we feel that borehole is cheaper than the first one I did, the total package, which involves even water treatment. So also this one, we had it for this rural water supply, a borehole at Mbagozi. And another one, as I said, that we have for the sake of for food security and poverty mitigation, supporting communities there to practice agriculture. Agriculture in itself is not easy, but when you add on irrigation, it becomes even more difficult. It becomes a technical business. Like this one, I don't know, you may not be able to see, but it's involving drip irrigation. Now, when you have such systems, it becomes technical. You can't expect the rural people to actually adopt to that, in that you have got this need to understand the system. There's some hydraulics, there's a pressure, what should be the pressure to operate in. So COPO has got to continue giving that support, and this is just one of the projects which it is involved in. I think we mentioned some, but this one is the one at Middle Plus, is what COPO did for last year, in terms of trying to support agriculture for the emerging farmers there. So those are the indicators I can say for what COPO has performed, or performance indicators for last year. And if I may come now to talk a bit of the financial statement, again, here we have a challenge at what such commission says the same. Our financial year comes end of March. Our external auditor is Kobla Kwashe. They are based in Babane, in Switzerland. They have started, once the year came to end, was coming to an end, they started collecting the documents and doing their auditing. But unfortunately, by now they haven't finished. But at least I'm indicating that last year we dedicated and qualified staff. And we don't see anything wrong that I have any doubt that we shall have a qualified statement this year. But once they are out again through Water Affairs, we shall make them available and hope they'll reach you so that if there is anything again, you can be able to see. And I'm also just indicating, as last year, we almost spent our budget on projects that have just indicated. I believe that again last year, we are likely to do the same. And this is just an indication of how we have done in the past year, our financial trend, and we are just showing that the biggest portion actually goes to the loan repayment, which is about 222 million per annum. The operational overhead is just about a tenth of that. It has now increased to about 32. And this trend we are just showing to indicate that actually our increase of the budget actually is very much within the CPI value. So we think our increase is sort of normal. We are also giving us an indicator to show the remuneration of our executives, just to show the trends. This is for this year, 2011, for 2011-12 last year, compared to the previous year, the increase, again, is very much minimal or within management level. There is slight variance, there are some indication there. This one showing as if we got more the previous year than last year is because of the bonus he had due to his contract coming to an end. But we have since then changed such that actually this figure is now the total package. And this one, it was vacant, so that value is low because this water manager reported much later. It didn't cover the whole 12 months. Also, the remuneration for the members of the board is, as indicated, the 1 to 0s. Those are people who are working for the Republic of South Africa Water Affairs. They don't actually earn any allowance when they sit on the board. And we have the other members who are from South Africa. This is what they earned this year compared to what they earned last year. And the slight variation in what they get is because the members belong to different subcommittees. And so you find, depending on the number of meetings or subcommittees, so you find some members getting slightly different from others. That's why we have this variance. And this is just an indication, as I said, to show some of our expenditure of the financial statement of last year. So that's what I can say for the financial statement as indicators, but I say that when the external auditors are finished, we shall make it available for you to see. As for this year's budget, I would like to emphasize the methodology of our budgeting. We are actually limited or guided by the treaty. The treaty between the two countries, the one I say that was signed between South Africa and Switzerland, is like our constitution. That is what we are supposed to operate in. And Article 11 of that treaty says how we actually are supposed to do our budgeting, and says unless otherwise determined by the JWTC or the Joint Water Commission, cover shall for reimbursement by the parties of all capital costs as well as operational maintenance costs incurred by Cobra prepare at least 4 months before the beginning of each year and present it to the two countries or through JWTC. So every November, we have got to make sure that actually we have done our budget, and then we present, we show what was the budget the previous year, and what are we budgeting for the coming year, and then we project it for the next 3 years, so that we have the 5 years, and then the member can see actually what we are planning to do, and what we are going to expect them to compensate for us. And that's what I have said, that the bigger portion is for the loans that actually we are repaying. The long-term cash flow focus covers a 5-year period, which I'm saying it includes. include the previous year, then the year that we are planning with a business plan, and then plus 3 years. And then it's in the business plan where we have this short-term cash flow, showing month by month how we actually expect to spend that money that we are asking for. The methodology we use, or we use this year, actually is based on zero-based budget, meaning that we look at the business plan, we look at the projects that we are actually going to do, and then that is what we budget from. It does not go with inflation, so we don't increase by a certain percentage. So you'll find that some year actually it can increase or even decrease, depending on the project that we are planning for that particular year. That's how we budget for the business plan or for this particular year that we are going to have. And then when it comes now to the following 3 years, we can say that we are going to budget the other 3 years, then that's what we use now, the CPI. We use that to guide us to project for the next 5 years. And this year, it was about 5.3 by August, and because we are doing this in November, so that is what we use to project for the other 3 years. The cost of living or compensation to employees remuneration was obtained by the HCC method, and that is what it gave. Basically, what it says is that you try to get the similar organizations, and then you pay towards the 50th percentile. And what we did for the increase for this year, we say that for people who are less than 10% from the 50th percentile, they got an increase of about 7%. But the ones who are at 10% from the 50th percentile and above, they got an increase of about 4%. That is according to this methodology of HCC. And the long-term loan repayment is the one which I said, the 222 million, which goes to the loan, that is actually fixed. It is fixed for now. We may look at it, but for now it's fixed about 22, and that's the bigger component. So that's how our budget is actually calculated. And looking at that, that's how we have our cash flow. This is 2011-2012 is the actual. This is what we spent, the actual expenditure in this column, which totals to about 244 million. And this is the one which I'm saying 2012-2013 for this financial year is the one which I'm saying which you budgeted based on zero-based budgeting for the operation and maintenance, and then the long-term is constant, and then we have some income which we generate that is based on a guest house and some rental house which were built during the construction of the houses, and then a couple is renting. So you can see this is a small income which comes, which means that the total, the net budget is 250. So this is what was budgeted this year based on what the methodology I'm saying is zero based. And then 2014, 2015, and the other 3 years, that's what I'm saying that they were escalated or projected using the CPI figure of 5.3. So this is our budget, and that's our projection, as you can see. That's how we budget. I've just highlighted some of the projects, because I've seen that our budget is based on zero-based, meaning that it's a project which determines actually what we require. And the first one, for example, is the maintenance of the copies dam, which requires maintenance and replacement of some valves and pipes, because it's old, so it's not something which is done annually. So you find that you can see how it's jumping from about 66 from last year coming to 444, because it's new. That is the lifespan of those valves needs replacement, so you find it has jumped, and that's how we budget. We go to what is required. The same thing at Mabuga Dam, again, requires that replacement, so you find it jumps from about 83 to about 350. That's a big jump. The next one is water management, which I'm saying is also jumping. and this is again because of what has wanted to improve the telemetry. Not the telemetry, but the technical data logger needs replacement. So again, based on that, we find that this big jump. Then this water management again, telemetry replacement. This is, like I say, to a certain extent, part of our preparation with what we are talking about, the climate change. We are finding that with climate change coming, we need to have proper instrumentation, proper network, which can help us to start monitoring the trends, floods or drought, because we are told that those are some of the events that may vary. So we need to reinforce our network, telemetry or monitoring network. Then the other component there is the water management decision support system, which is dive modeling. It's a vast pass, a water research commission. I saw it being presented last year. We are adopting at COBA, then there's Mac Basin. Again, these are tools which are being introduced or installed at COBA for the purpose of actually improving management losses and also management, as we feel that with the so-called climate change coming, the operation needs to be very close, otherwise we can easily find we are losing a lot of water. So these are some of the indicators which I say that we look at and base our budget on that, besides the big loan that we pay. Yeah, and then I'm coming to the last component, which is now the key strategic areas for our business plan for this year. Again, I'll just highlight some. The first one is determine operating rule to balance this year's water demand. Every year we have got to look at the hydrology, what is the system, do we have enough water? Then we have got to see what are required by the two countries, and then determine an operating rule that will make sure that actually is balanced. So that if there is need for any restriction or rationing, we need to tell them in advance. And that we do by determining an operating rule, which we then communicate to the two countries through the JWC. So the deliverable is the annual operating rule, what I'm saying, updated 2013 annual operating rule for the two systems. The other key area that we think we need to do in this key area efficient water management is the mapping of 1 in 50 flood lines. We find downstream on the floodplain, downstream of the dams, we don't have that, and we find it a risk. So we need to demarcate this area so that we can show which areas are dangerous, so that if there is any flood coming, that warning has got to come, people can know where evacuation should take place. They have got to move to which place. So what we establish those marks, the mark have some clear marking which can be seen from far, so that when there is any siren or warning, people can actually make sure they are outside the danger zone. Then the third one is improvement of water gauging and telemetry system. I think that's what I've already said. This is part of what I'm saying, our preparation for the climate change, to start picking if there is any trend in the floods, any trend in the drought, we would like to start picking. So we would like to have these systems. And this telemetry will also have us to move into what we call real-time operation, whereby you can be able to see the hydrology and the weather itself, and then respond to it, rather than depending on historical data. Before, we have been operating based on stochastic, which is based on historical. But because of climate change, we find that we may be playing offside if we have got to continue playing that. So we are trying to see if we can improve our telemetry and monitoring system so that you not only depend on the historical data. Historical data is just there to guide, but you can be able to look at the weather, can be able to see what people are asking, and then you operate depending on that particular time, really time operation. Then the fourth one is the sedimentation survey at Maguga Dam. I've said we have just finished this year at the Recovery. It was the old one. Now we are moving to Maguga Dam, where we are going to do the sedimentation survey to determine the capacity and therefore the yield of that system, and see if there is any need to start aquatic warning or setting other interventions in upstream catchment in case sedimentation is higher than we actually projected or thought. The other key performance research area is assessment, occupational safety, and environmental management. And these are some of the highlights, again, which we are going to concentrate on. Establishment of risk and quality control management function. This is, again, a function which we think is important, also pointed out by the JWC, which we have got to establish the business plan itself and also try to make sure that the staff has been recruited to take that functionality. The other component is water, complete Comora water purification plant. This is the one I said that we didn't finish because of some of the disputes that we have there. We are hoping that once it's resolved, then we need to complete it so that people can actually start getting purified water in that community. The other one is the implementation of environmental monitoring and management system. This one, we want to continue improving our system until we actually acquire the ISO 14001. So it's an improvement because of when COPA started, the reserve or the environmental water requirement was not key. So it was not really factored at that time. But I think since then, we know that the reserve has been identified as one of the main requirements from a river system. So we are improving through this initiative. Then we also, in the key research area 3, we are talking of stakeholder information liaison and cooperation. We feel we need to interact with the stakeholders or users more, and we are establishing establishment of information center at Copies, and the deliverable there is a customer center at Copies so that we can continue interacting. We have had quite a few cases where we make decisions that we find that it's not flowing with the communities. It depends on a third party. So we want to improve that where it's documented. This is a center. If the stakeholders hear that there's anything that COPA is doing, they can follow it and come and see what's required, or at least they have somebody whom they can contact for any further clarification. Then the second one is corporate social responsibility. Again, this is what we are saying, that we want to see that we are reaching the communities. As the settlement takes place, you find that the sanitation becomes a problem. There are some people who are still using, even livestock, who are still using water from rivers and boreholes, and we keep monitoring that to see the water quality and see how we can advise or intervene. And lastly, the key results area is repositioning COBWA in a turnaround strategy. I think this is part of what this portfolio committee also pointed out. And in this, as I had said earlier, that the treaty is like our constitution. And we find it difficult, especially given that it is by the two countries, to operate outside that. Until the two countries agree, we are sort of confined. And we have shown, for example, that within the committee, there are quite a number of projects which were actually identified at the planning level, but were only mandated to do with phase one of the two dams. So we are looking at the treaty with the aim of sort of pointing out and advising the JWC or the countries how we think we can actually contribute even more. But this is not actually our core. So we have seen some things we are pointing out, but we can't really start publicly talking about it because then it will look like we are trying to cut our own cake. So it's an exercise which we have talked to JWC, and we are revising that, and then we present to them, and then plus what they think that they can mandate the COBWA, then that is what we can actually work on. So our aim is that we shall present what will be acceptable to them, and then they can see how they can we can implement it. The other one is the loan restructuring. As you have seen, that loan is big. It's the main loan is the main budget. It goes to the main budget, and it's something which we are looking at. And as I say, that once an agreement has been signed, it is not easy to cut it. But we feel we have had some people look at it and find the scope to actually have a 50-50 that we can be able to come up with a better better single facility where somebody maybe could take up that loan, pay the others, and then because of the increased business that he'll be having, then he can have a different terms for COPA. So we are working on that, but it's something which goes into quite some detailed accountancy and some detailed negotiation. So it's a process which is taking, and we are hoping that that will help us to a certain extent actually even improve on our budget, because 2022 is our main budget and it's going to find different issues which facilitate the scope for us to improve on it. I think that is the end of my presentation as it is for COPA. Thank you.
Mother drive you to the hospital after this.
We are going to
You sure you don't want us to take you to hospital? Those packets I gave you, the TCTA. Then run again. Okay.
You can't explain it. Okay.
Yeah.
Before you jump here, they say you must go through elections first.
From there is a list of projects alone is take 1.6 billion. Israel has 2027. This one is very long, it's 15 years. Now it's 2012, 2027, 15 years later. So you got some, it's a BBSA in 2020, and Midco Bank in 2019, and Genesis Bank in 2016, etc. This one. I'd like to know why this one got a 2027, what reason. So, for your long term, it's wrong. I'd like to know what your instruction for the, and make your in future for the your long-term payment. So also from the your board member, because you take all the long-term is wrong, is accountability. So your board member is some half is from the other country. Three from the Swaziland and three from South Africa. So I want to know what they take more responsibility or accountability for from the Swaziland side. Because all the budget are from the South Africa for COVA side. So I'd like to know this more detail. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. My question is around the mobile water purification plant. It's very nice to see that presentation. I'd like to know how many of these plants do you have, where are they stationed at the moment, and how do you transport this particular plant from one place to another, and at whose funding the operation of that particular plant. Also, the mapping of the flood lines, you said it's non-existent downstream at the moment. What are you applying now at the moment as a flood line, and is there a danger present in the absence of the flood line? They would be flooding in a particular area, particularly downstream. And also on the sedimentation survey, you're referring only to the Mazuko Dam. You're doing the same as the assembly copy system. It's the same being applied there as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Partly I'm covered. Now I just want to extend the question to ask if they said the environment when they started, it was not a key point. Now I want to know, they said they are building this information center at Rikopis. I want to know if at Mabuga is there any information center.
Thank you, Chair. I'll reply some, and the CEO and the other members will also help me some of the questions that I may not remember to caption. The first one, I think, was on the water manager whose salary increase was from 564.9 to 779.6. There's an explanation there where I said that that position was vacant for some time in the 2010-2011. So that salary or remuneration of 564,000 was just a fraction of what he would have earned if he had been there. So that's how it is showing to be quite different. So it's not the increase of 30%, but if you took the whole package, it would just be within the other managers. The other one was also on the Mr. Lamini, was it the non-executive directors, where he got 114,000 last year, and then the following year he got about 58,000. And this is again why I say that different committees, find that different functions come. We also had the JWC, which was meeting frequently, and he had to come and sit in and write for them the minutes. There was a disciplinary committee which took place, and was appearing.
and he's a lawyer by profession, chairing and making presentation. So he's a frequency of how we appeared sometime on his own on the committees. So the difference is because of that, that the scheduled board meetings are not the same. We have subcommittees, and then you find that some members, even in the scheduled board meetings, some will not attend, and when they don't attend, then they don't claim. So that's how we have that variation. So if it wasn't for the disciplinary hearing, you would not have reached that 114. It would just be in the same range as the others. The other one, I think, was on the loan. The Amrut loan, which is ending 2027. Yeah, this one I can say is a bit difficult to respond to that, but I can say our response will say that we are looking at restructuring. I think that's how we can say we are addressing it. We realize that in some of those loans, I say that we have already given some experts and they have looked at it, and they feel there's a scope where we can save. Because that is what was signed at then. That's an agreement which we came and found existing. All these loans, I can say the present board and the CEO were not involved in it. It is something which was initiated by the parties at that time when they started this project. As I say, that COGWA was not involved in the whole sub of development. It came in and said that, okay, you're not going to do the construction from design and construction. But we say that we are now looking at it, and we feel that the scope, if we can relook at it, interest and even the length, there is that possibility that we feel we can actually make some better improvement on it. I can say we have already talked to TPSA, TPSA, South Africa, Development Bank of South Africa. They have looked at it, they are interested. So they are part of the team which is actually looking at it and saying that there is scope where we can come in, help and look at the restructuring, and then see if we can talk to these other partners and see how we can improve. But as it is, that is an agreement which we just have got to honor until we find a different negotiation or a different thing has come. We can't do much at the moment. Yeah, the other one was, if I've forgotten some of the things, I think the CEO and the other members will also come back. But I'm going to talk, the other one was about the mobile prescription plan, if I make it clear, you can talk about that.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe before I respond to that, there was a question regarding responsibility of the directors, which came up. Maybe one needs to clarify that COBA is a unitary board of six people, three from Swaziland, three from South Africa. And they operate as one board responsible for overseeing the operations of the entity. And then the mobile plans, one of the sub-questions was, where are they? I think the chairman indicated that our area of operation is actually on the Komati sub-basin, which is from Carolina all the way to Komati Port. So the three mobile units, one is supplying a community called Buffett Sprit next to the border with Swaziland on the South African side. And then the other one is supplying a community called Block B, which is near Tonga, also in the Mpumalanga region. And the third one, which is incomplete, is in a place called Unplas or Gomora, which is also in the Mpumalanga region. All three of them are within the Komati catchment. How are they moved? They are called mobile in the sense that you can set them up and you can dismantle them and then take them to another area. So the process of moving them around when that time comes, it will have to be contracted out because COBA as an entity doesn't have the capacity. It gets outsourced through tenders and then they move it to the next point. Flatline markers, We have already started with the flatline markers, and we started from the bottom end of the sub-catchment. So at the very end of the sub-catchment, the flatline markers are there, and we are coming up the river. And then there was a question about the sedimentation survey. The chairman pointed out that in this past year, which ended in March, we did the sedimentation survey of Trikopis Dam. And we just got the report which indicated that the capacity went down by about 1%, and that is still going to be considered by the board. So this year we are moving to Maguga Dam. So it has already been done in Trikopis, which is the older one of the two. Information center. For some reason, during the capital for Trikopis, the information center was not included, but it was included at Maguga. So it's already there operating at Maguga. Our initiative is to establish it at Trikopis as well.
I'd like to follow up regarding the flood markers. Is there an existing one or isn't? And what is being applied should there be flooding in the absence of the present system?
If I understand the question correctly, is are there existing flood markers? Like I mentioned earlier on, we do have existing ones, but they are not covering the whole basin. So at the moment, in the absence of the flood markers, we do have a tricky situation. But we do have them in the most vulnerable areas, which are at the bottom of the catchment, and we are moving up the catchment. And at the moment, what we normally do is to liaise with the national disaster management agencies to try and share information and just give a general alert on what may happen. And the countries also have their own systems of dealing with such emergencies. So I would say we improvise by working with the party disaster management agencies.
Chair and other members of COBRA are doing a very good job. Keep it up. Members, as we were aware that we had to shift the presentation by TCTA because of the non-availability of both members. So we have just been informed that the deputy chair has arrived. And he will have to explain himself as to why he ran late. He did, in fact, came to me and apologize, but I said he must do it publicly to other members so that they can whip him a bit. Thanks, Tolo.
Chair, I've already introduced TCTA, I will now hand over to the Deputy Chair. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members of the committee, I am here to be slaughtered. I would like to firstly apologize on behalf of the Chair of the TCTA and the CEO, who unfortunately had to be out of the country, and I was then asked come and be part of these proceedings. I also apologize for the late arrival due to the plane delays from East London. And in apologizing, I want to state it very clearly that as TCTA, we take very seriously the role of this committee. And we see it as a very important part of our duty as well to account and report to this committee. So may this committee please accept our apologies as not an indication of our disrespect to this committee. And we sincerely apologize and will ensure that next time something like this does not happen. the members of the executive, and I've got with me the COO, the Chief Operations Officer, Janet Ndrabo, Halima Nazir, the CFO, Zodon Zale, the Executive Manager for Project Finance and Treasury, and Lasani, the Company Secretary, and Richard Holden, the Business Analyst for the Asset Mine Drainage. Members of the committee, can I go through each of them if you want to? Okay, let me start with the COO, Janet Ndrabo, and the CFO. Next to me, Halima, and Zodon Zale is the one who's driving the presentation. Lasane is sitting next to me, and Richard sits behind me. Thank you, Chair. The way we're going to handle the presentation, I'll just run.
Before you continue, I'd just like to hear from members that whether they want to say something in responding to your allegation. Nothing. So our policy is accepted.
Thank you. Thank you so much, members. Thank you, Chair. I really appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you. The way we're going to handle the presentation, I'll just run through the overview part of it very quickly and allow the COO to go into some of the detail in terms of introducing our organization, TCTA, Trans-Caledon Tunnel Authority. And then we will also touch on the specific projects, and I'll ask Zodwa to take us through the directives and the expanded role, and then the CFO will handle the budget and the financial highlights.
TCTA is a special vehicle that is advanced by the Department of Water Affairs to raise funding of budget. This started more as a special purpose for one project, which is the Lesotho Highlands scheme. But over the years, it has grown, and currently the organization is sitting with about six projects worth over 10.9 billion, doing all sorts of projects which are seen as strategic in nature by the department, comprising of at least two dams currently and more than 300 kilometers of massive bulk water pipelines and more than six pump stations, mega pump stations that are related to that. So what was firstly a special purpose vehicle for one project has grown into a multi-project implementing organization. The purpose of constructing this works off budget is to ensure that the cost of infrastructure development is paid for by the end users, particularly commercial end users, and not by the entire tax base. And this has got an impact of reducing government's borrowing requirements as funding is raised off budget by TCTA. Our vision as an organization is to be a leader in sustainable supply of water in the region in support of the department's mandate. Our mission then is to facilitate the water security through planning, financing, implementation of bulk water infrastructure in the most cost-effective manner for the benefit of the consumer. In fulfilling that mission, we have set as a board some key strategic objectives, and the first one would be to deliver on mandates provided by the minister in accordance with specifications within the agreed timelines and budget. The minister every now and again would issue directives to us as an organization, and our objective is to basically deliver those projects on time within all the other specifications. It is also to facilitate social transformation and build sustainable communities by providing jobs and empowerment. Central to what we are doing is ensuring that we do not just leave infrastructure, but we leave a legacy of a society that is transformed in terms of what we do, involving various players in the implementation process and leaving skills and facilities that can even be used by communities and providing the much-needed jobs. We'll if I may. Moving on, we also build knowledge and capability of the organization to generate lessons for project improvements, particularly because TCTA is fortunate to be operating in a space where we're building projects that come once in a while in terms of their size and scale and complexity. So we are deliberate then in building the knowledge and learning from these and documenting some of these lessons learned even for future projects. We also ensure the continuous availability of high caliber human capital for delivering on organizational mission in future. It becomes very important for us as an organization that is fairly specialized, not only on the engineering side, but on the fundraising, the sourcing of capital, the risk management aspect, that we should have the high caliber staff, and we are able to retain this and provide stability that is needed for a vehicle that implements such critical projects for the department. At this stage, I'll ask the COO to just unpack some of our products and services and move on in unpacking other elements of what we do as an organization. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. As has been mentioned, committee members, the main objective of TCTA is to ensure that we provide bulk water infrastructure as directed by the Minister. And this we do by ensuring that the lowest cost is passed on to the end consumer. In doing this, we've been known to raise funding. We have to raise funding for the projects that we're implementing and then manage the liabilities relating to that infrastructure. In addition to that, we also do project design, project management. We provide knowledge management in terms of the work that we do. We generate knowledge in terms of our capability, which we share in the sector at large. We also have targeted objectives in relation to socio-economic transformation. We also involve in setting tariffs for the off-takers that benefit from our project. As the water entity, we have to ensure that we contribute to the strategic objectives of the country. And this we do by ensuring that through the projects that are implemented, there's an emphasis on utilizing of women-owned enterprises and local enterprises. And to date, we've got a target of 150 million, and my apologies, Chair, for not putting the figures up there. And this is an accumulative target for the duration of the implementation of projects. We also have gone further and engaged the contractors that are implementing our project by putting in the contract that we give to them, that they have to empower local enterprises. They have to have two at least of local enterprises that they empower over the period of the implementation of the project. And today, the target that we placed there for all our projects is 350 million, and that is cumulative over the period of implementation. We also have, in terms of transformation targets, have to ensure that local labor is utilized where the projects are being implemented. And to date, I'm pleased to announce that we've employed semi-skilled and skilled workers to the tune of 982. And that figure will increase, obviously, as we implement the rest of the projects that have been allocated to us. We don't have a slide, but I would like also to highlight the internal empowerment that we normally do. We've to date given bursaries to 9 students. And I had earlier on, the committee members wanted to know the breakdown from the previous entity. The breakdown in relation to that 9, we've got 2 that we identified from the rural areas in KZN. We've got 4 that we identified in Limpopo and 3 in Gauteng. Initially, we had 10, and unfortunately, 1 did not make it through the first year. We are in the 3rd year of paying for their fees. And on top of that, we also provide them with well-being, in terms of providing them with skills of how to study. As you know, that when you get to tertiary, some of them may not have been exposed to the level of education that may be required at that level. So we provide psychologists. We ensure that they are well catered for in terms of being orientated into tertiary institutions. And all of these students are going to Mangosuthu University of Technology. We've got 1 in University of KwaZulu-Natal, University of Johannesburg, Vets, and Vaal University of Technology.
if we may move forward and even highlight, we'll go into detail in terms of what do we have under each project. But the first initial project that led to the establishment of TCTA through the treaty with the Lesotho government was the Lesotho Highlands Water Project Phase 1. This was between 1986 and 2002. We were then given a directive by the Minister of Water Affairs in 2002 to implement the BEV Water Project. That was followed by the FRESA project, which is the Vaal River Eastern Subsystem Augmentation Project, in 2004. Moim Gaming Transfer Scheme Phase 2 was then given to us in 2007. In 2008, we started work together with the department on Oliphant River Water Resource Development Project Phase 2. There have been further developments to that project. We've been reissued with a new directive. Mogolo Crocodile Water Augmentation Project Phase 1, that was issued to TCTA in 2009. In 2008 as well, we got Gomadi Water Scheme Augmentation Project. The most recent project that we've received directives on Nezi Bupilo Borehole project. We'll tell you more about that. That we got in the financial year 2010-2011. The most recent one, which has received a lot of coverage in the media, is the acid mine drainage that we got in the financial year of 2001-2012. These are just highlights in terms of the challenges that are faced by the sector, and some of this work, obviously, some of the information we've pulled out from other entities and the work that has been done by the department, and we all know the constraints that have been faced in at the national level and MISPA level in relation to the sector. In particular, probably to us, we know that there will be a number of changes proposed in terms of institutional reform and realignment process. We are part of that process together with the department, and we will be directed further in terms of where the department is going in regard to that. And broadly, probably the best deadlocks in the sector as well, we all know that. And these are the things that we consider as we're implementing our projects, the effects of climate change, and many other challenges which probably have been highlighted before. I'll now hand over to Georgia to give us further details in terms of the funding that we've raised for each particular project and the work that we've done so far in terms of the project that we've been doing.
Thank you. I'll take the members through the directives, but specifically the directives that are under the implementation. The ones that have been implemented, like the LHWP, bare water, would not be discussed for the purposes of this presentation. The first one, which is almost completed, as you can see, I work with engineers, they like pictures. So they've put this picture, this project is almost complete, and it's meant for Sasol as well as Eskom as the off-takers for this project. It was just to lay the pipe, 131-kilometer pipeline, 1.9 diameter, and also the associated pump station. We raised commercial funding, like my colleague, the deputy chair, indicated, 2.7 billion for this particular project, and it will be completed by May this year, and it will be completed within the timelines approved. And also in terms of the cost, it will be completed within the 2.7 billion. It has already started delivering water through the temporary abstraction works as they are finalizing the permanent abstraction works. So that's really the highlight of the FRESA project. The next project, which is it's not necessarily the construction, but it's where the site is. In Moyo Mgeni, we have gone past the site processes and we have started the construction again on this one. This project is largely meant to benefit the KZN municipalities, particularly the economic hub part of it, which is Esegwini Mgongunzo Umsunduzi, as well as Ugu, which is not mentioned there. There will also be the other two municipalities benefiting, but they are not necessarily the off-takers in this project, but they will benefit. So essentially, there are six municipalities who would benefit. However, the payment would be largely skewed towards the big four municipalities. Again, here it's a Spring Grove Dam. Those of you might have heard about Spring Grove construction, and the water conveyance system and the pump station. And again, here, the project has been funded from the market, and when you say from the market, it's in just like first up was funded by Nedbank. Again, here, Nedbank, APSA, it was likely the commercial bank that funded first up. Again, here on the Moyemgeni, it was the short-term funding was provided by Nedbank, but the rest of the funding has been provided by the development finance institutions like the Development Bank of Southern Africa and the other international DFIs. Again, it's under construction, so the cost or expenditure incurred to date is about 346 million. Challenges that you may be faced here is the resettlement of people living around the dam basin. In a sense that if it takes longer to resettle that those people, it might impact on our timeline to meet the, you know, the empowerment of 2012 October. So that's basically what we're talking about. It's just the time it takes usually to resettle people. The next project is the Komati water supply augmentation project. It's not the same as the Komati that Gobo was referring to. This is the pipeline, which is running from the Val River, the Fresa system, to provide water to Matla Power Station as well as the Duva Power Station and later to Kusile Power Station. So unfortunately, you can't see the pipe. This is why the engineers have insisted to put the power station at least, because there needs to be a picture on what I'm talking about. The pipe is laid underground. Again, here, the cost of the project is about 1.76 billion, which we have successfully raised funding for recently as well, funded by the South African Commercial Bank, by the Rand Merchant Bank, and the Development Bank of Southern Africa was part of the funding, as well as Nedbank and APSA in this case has been part of this project. So if you look at the kind of project that, you know, with all the banks in South Africa have taken keen interest in funding to CTA project, and that dates back to so many years of funding also the LHWP. Again, this one is also moving ahead. The water will be delivered, the completion of the pipe will be, the target is 2012, and 30 kilometers of the 58 kilometers that needs to be laid has been put underground. I know there might look like there's confusion, the 68 and the 58, it is 68, it's proper, it's just that one pipe is going to the Matla and the other one is going to the Duba. So if you add the two, it will give the total of the 68. The next project is the Olifants River Water Resource Development Project. Most of you might have heard of the Duop Dam, which has been constructed by the Department of Water Affairs through the Fiscus. This is again part of the, at that time, the envisage laid out of the, I think it is the dam itself. It's just a picture. I don't know whether in reality it looks like this, but yeah, you can imagine this is how it looks. Now, CCTA has been mandated to, again, continue to implement. This is slightly different in that we are currently implementing using the funds coming from the government specifically to implement just one phase of the bulk distribution network, because there's a dam, then the second, the next phase is the bulk distribution network to the various off-take points. So it's only that portion 2C, which is meant to provide water to the Nebo Plateau for the communities, those who might be familiar with Limpopo, they would know where the Nebo Plateau is. It's one of the poor communities who need to have water before the 2014 MDG goals target. What is also important, the scheme is meant to benefit both the mines and the social beneficiaries, but we are going back to the drawing boards in terms of negotiating with the mines as well as the department and other role players like the National Treasury, and to see how best we can provide the infrastructure solution, which is funded off budget, leveraging on what the mines also can provide on put forward on the table in order to unlock the economic development in that area. But just the focus for now is just the 2C, whilst, you know, the negotiations are ongoing parallel to that. Mokolo project, this is again, it's an existing Mokolo dam that you see there. But what is important is that this project is one of the critical projects which is meant to support the Medupi power station. So it has to be implemented at an accelerated pace in order to meet the requirements of Medupi, to provide the enabling infrastructure to Medupi power station, as we know that it's dependent on this water. Largely, if there's no water, they may not be able to fire up. Where we are, this is just a phase one of the project, and also the beneficiaries for this project, other than the power station being Eskom in this case, there's also Exaro, who is mining the coal, and Ipalele, the local municipalities. So this is a joint project in that 75% of the project is funded from the commercial loans, 25% is funded by the government on behalf of the Ipalele for the social users. Again, the description there is the pipeline, the pump station, as well as acquiring the existing infrastructure. The cost of the project is 2.1 billion, and I think the rest is just the water delivery date, 2013. We should be able to meet the water delivery date. Again, here the funders were largely the South African institutions, being the Nedbank, RMB, and Investec this time around. So we also had, I must say, we also explore other funding institutions like the PIC and see whether they can, you know, fund our projects. We have found them to be a bit expensive because, you know, they need to give good return to the pension fund. The other project that we are working on is the acid mine drainage, and I know that there will be a dedicated session to deal with the nitty-gritties on this project. However, it's just important to also highlight where we stand. TCTA has been mandated to look into the short-term intervention, you know, to provide the short-term solution. And where we are critically, it's funded by the National Treasury, by the MTF process through the department, who then pass it on to the TCTA to implement the short-term solution. So far, what has been secured in the budget, which is a challenge, is 413 million versus the 925 that is required in order to implement just the short-term solution. So that is the challenge that it's being experienced when it comes to this project, other than the topical issues on the environmental critical level being breached. It's one of the challenges that needs to be overcome. The long-term solution is also equally being considered. Well, there's no directive for it, but at the end of the day, the project needs to be sustainable and to be looked into from the long-term point of view as well. As soon as that information is ready, I think the team that is working on AMD will share with this team, with this committee in the next couple of months or so. The status where we are, for the immediate solution, it is under construction. The rehabilitation of the Rand uranium plant is under construction. And also the tender for the short-term intervention is under evaluation. So there's two processes that are underway. The challenge is, again, here is the issue of accessing the land, the mining land and the infrastructure, with the potential implications on liabilities. And also on the environmental authorization, it's very difficult for the government to step in, you know, in rectifying the existing situation, in the sense that the problem that we found ourselves with was created by the mines, which most of them do not even exist, and even if they did exist, some of them to go after their shoulders may not make sense because of the limited liability nature of the company. So those are the challenges that are being experienced currently with the project. However, there will be a solution as the teams work ahead. The last project, the Mesu-Vopelo project, it's a unique project, this one, in that it's a borehole project that we are implementing on behalf of the department, and it's fully funded from the government coffers. It covers all the regions that have been mentioned there, Eastern Cape, Free State, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northwest, and KwaZulu-Natal. The total project is about 36 million. It's one of the smallest projects, and KwaZulu-Natal has been allocated about 6 million out of the 36. And that's it on the projects which are under construction by or under implementation by CCTA. On just on also having, you know, CCTA has harnessed its skills to a point that it can now make use of the skills to the benefit of the sector at large. Now, what we have then done as an organization, we have imparted our skills to certain municipalities where we assist them. In some cases, we assist them with the loan valuation. In some cases, we assist them with the tariff modeling. In some cases, also with the knowledge management team, we have also come up with the national desalination strategy that we have put forward to those municipalities also to consider and to the department. So I know that also there's been a request from the department for us to assist on Amathole as well, Amathole turnaround strategy. So as and when required, we really make use of our skills for the benefit of the sector. Given that the skill set that CCTA possesses is very unique in just not necessarily in the sector itself, but in the public sector in general. With that, I will hand over to the CFO to take us through the budget 2012.
Thank you, Chair, honourable members. If you have a look at the budget overview for 2012-13. What the focus has been on is taking into consideration what my colleague has just mentioned in terms of all of the projects that we anticipate focusing on in the next year, specifically AMD being the most recent. We're also anticipating on CrossUp and MMTS2, that towards the latter part of the year, we would also start earning revenues on those projects. We're also anticipating extensive revamp in our IT infrastructure. We also have been quite busy in the past year on our business model, and we are anticipating rolling out a new business model in the new financial year, and also building our knowledge hub. If you look at the numbers at a glance, what we anticipate spending on capital expenditure is 3.6 billion. So over the next slide, please. Thank you. Income, 3.8 billion. Income basically is composed of the tariffs that we generate on the various projects. Our directly controllable expenditure, 264. That's mainly our admin expenditure. Our indirectly controllable expenditure of 853 million. And finance costs of 2.5 billion, basically relating directly to the interest costs being incurred on the funding that's being raised.
If you go to the next slide on the budget, on the capital expenditure, this graph basically just depicts the various projects as Zodwa has outlined, basically capturing the anticipated spend in the next period for each of them. BWP and FedSub may stand out because of the negative amounts that you are seeing there. That is because we are in the finalization stages of all these projects, and there have been certain claims that have been submitted by the contractors which were paid, but we have challenged those claims. So the negative numbers you see there are what we anticipate as recovering on these claims that we have paid. This graph just depicts our anticipated water income over the next 3 years, and also showing how it actually trends compared to the 11-12 period. As you notice, there is an increasing trend in income over the next 3 years. All of the income is based on signed water supply agreements. And if you would see, you will see the slight amounts being reflected for Pumati and MMTS2, as I've alluded to previously indicating that this would be the first year where we start earning revenues on these projects. From a running expenditure perspective, this again now includes your directly controllable expenditure and your indirectly controllable expenditure. Your directly controllable will be all of your admin costs and your overheads for running the organization, including your staff. Your indirectly controllable expenditure, the largest component of that is the royalties, which we pay on the LHWP project to the government of Lesotho. If we move to the finance charges for the year, what you would notice is that in 2013-14, it's quite high, and then it has a sudden drop in the next period. That's mainly relating to the increasing trend that you see is due to the incremental funding with the capex on the projects increasing. But then in 2014-15, the reason why you would see that drop is because then the newer projects that we are working on, specifically Olifants and A and D, is socially funded. So we are not incurring funding costs on those. And in, as I've explained in the previous slide, your increased financing cost is a direct, bears direct relation to your increased funding requirement as your project activity increases. We've also had one of our bonds, our WISI 5 bond, as we call it, moves directly with CPI on an annual basis. That also contributes towards the increases in the financing cost that you are seeing.
Thank you.
In summary, on our budget, we have we anticipate a net surplus of 198 million for the 2012-13 year. This is higher than the 11-12 approved budget. Note I did say surplus. Again, driven by the higher water sales, predominantly because of the onboarding of two projects which now start earning income, and we partially offset by increases in our indirectly controllable expenditure, specifically royalties. Now, royalties, it's based directly on the volumes of water that are delivered into South Africa. There's also a fixed component. Now, both, specifically the variable component, moves with the ESI, which is the Eskom index, and the PPI. And we have seen large fluctuations on those because of the stepped-in huge increases on the ESI. The CAPEX is 1.1 billion Rand higher than our 11-12, and that's purely in relation to the how the project activity peaks. Funding requirement of 3.4 billion, it's marginally lower funding requirements, cross-up and MACRAP approach end of construction. Directly controllable expenditure, we've had 264 million that we are projecting, and our admin costs are increasing in direct proportion to our increased project activity. This table is illustrating those four components over the next 2 years as well. I think they have been sufficiently explained via the graph that I have gone through just now. The revenue, as alluded to in one of the earlier slides, is based purely on the implementation agreements, the budgeted volumes as reflected, and the anticipated tariffs based on that, as well as a CPI component on the tariffs as well. You'll notice on the CAPEX that 2013-14, 2014-15, we see a decline in the capital expenditure. That's because of the decline in the capital expenditure for those periods, decline in activities on Kwazulu and MMTS, as well as on Woolly funds. That is anticipated. The funding requirement by year, Chair, I've already explained this. This is just depicting it pictorially, showing a comparison of this graph. Sorry, actually shows the portion of the our funding requirement that is fiscal. In other words, that we are receiving from DWA, and that would predominantly be for the Woolly funds and the AMD. And then the darker blue block there is actually the funding, all of the commercial funding. So in other words, those would be a tariff that we would recover from the commercial off-takers. Medium-term finance charges by year bear direct relation to the capital expenditure per project, and and bear direct relation to the social portions as well. Okay. We then move to the running expenditure again, showing you the trend. Running expenditure for the next 2 years are basically purely a factor of increase in CPI, and then for those specific expenditure that are dependent on agreement, those increases have been incorporated. In summary, then, on our medium-term forecast, net surplus increases from 2012-13 to 2014-15, and that's due largely due to the increased revenue with Kwasop and MMTS2, and then towards the latter part, Makolo would also start to earn revenue. That would be in your 2014-15 year. Our capital expenditure decreases towards 2014-15 as some of the projects near completion, and our funding requirement declines as a direct relation to that capital expenditure, and the directly controllable expenditure increases going into the 2014-15 are purely inflationary or contract based. If we move on to the financial highlights, we basically received an unqualified audit report. What you see there on the slide is merely an extract out of the actual audit report, indicating that for all aspects, financial as well as all compliance to regulatory requirements and laws, we have there have been no findings, no material findings. Salient elements. We included in the 2011 financials the Makolo as well as the borehole project. Makolo we had previously included, however, it was only in the 2011 financial year that we received the formal mandate. We had been reflecting it in previous years under advisory services. So 2011 was the first year we separately shown it there as a Makolo project. And then we also took into consideration all of the amendments to the International Financial Reporting Standards. In the 2011 year, we had a prior period adjustment, basically requiring us to then amend our 2010 comparative numbers. And the reason for the prior period adjustment predominantly related to advance payments that we had received, as well as in terms of the Kwasop directive. It's basically the way we had interpreted the implementation agreement. A portion of the money that we had received were, in fact, advance payment funding by Komati, by Eskom at the beginning of the project. And once we had secured our long-term funding, those actually were repaid. So we needed to just revise the treatment from revenue to actual funding. Okay, that's just going into more details on that. If you look at a comparison of our comprehensive income for the period, your revenue is in direct relation to the supply agreement. Your royalties paid, I have mentioned that has significantly increased, and it has been due to increases in the volumes of water. And I must just add that the volumes of water that are delivered into South Africa are governed by the treaty. So they cannot deliver anything more or less than what is regulated per the treaty. However, we were also impacted by the large increases in the ESI. Our operating expenses, we have a decline from what was reflected in the previous year's financials. And largely due to, on the FRESA project, we had what we call a temporary obstruction works, which had been utilized, and they had been fully amortized. Hence, in the 2011 year, the proportion of amortization that we were reflecting was significantly lower. Your finance costs have decreased, and that's due to your LHWP total debt declining. We had repaid one of our bonds, the WZ3, in September 2010. That, in a nutshell, is our income statement. If we look then at our statement of our financial position, I do apologize for the way it's reflected. There's cutting off some of the text, but I think it is in the presentation in front of you. Property, plant, and equipment, increase in 2011, which is what you would expect, considering that we had a significant spend in 2011 on our CapEx. Intangible assets, that basically refers to the cost of the LHWP project. So what you basically see there is a slight declines every year based on the amortization. I must just add that in terms of the property, plant, and equipment and intangible assets, for the 2012 financials, we are actually going through a process where we are revising our accounting treatment, where these matters, these items would actually be reflected as financial assets. We've gone through a whole process of technical review of the latest standards, and we've also in consultation with DWA as well on their treatment, because it also impacts them. Loans and other receivables, that's basically just a factor of timing of when we received monies. Short-term financial market instruments, we had redeemed our WZ3 bond in September 2010, hence you'll see the decline in 2011 because the majority portion of those investments related to the what we had been setting aside for the redemption of the bond in September 2010. Okay. In terms of our equities and our liabilities, the reserves and deficits, that's merely a factor of the accumulated deficit over the period. Just to highlight that you shouldn't be alarmed if you see that accumulated deficit. In terms of our business model, because we want to ensure affordable tariffs, we repay the debt over 20 years. So what we then do is we smooth the tariff over the 20-year period, and what that actually results in that is in the earlier years of the project, you will actually see deficits. And in the later years of the project, your cash would actually then exceed your interest costs, then enabling you to then whittle down the debt and hence reduce your finance costs and your expenditure. Your short-term financial market liabilities, again, that portion that had been reflected there in 2010 was for the redemption of the WZ3 in September 2010, and that's been significantly reduced then with the redemption of that bond in September 2010. Then just to emphasize that TCTA is a going concern, at the end of 2011, the auditors have concurred, and so too have the board, with TCTA being a going concern. All of our income agreements allow for CPI adjusted increase on an annual basis, as well as provide for automatic triggers so that in the instance of any changes in our base assumptions, for instance, your interest rates, your volumes, etc., we actually are allowed to invoke automatic triggers on the tariffs to ensure that our our end goal of repaying the tariffs in 20 years is still applicable. In the 2010-11 financial year, just to emphasize, we had an operating surplus of $2.3 billion, and we reflected a surplus of $44 million in aggregate, looking across all of our projects. Chair, thank you.
Chair, that's the presentation from our side, and in closing, I just want to indicate that we would like to commit again at TCTA that we see ourselves as a special purpose vehicle by the department that is willing to support this very critical sector in every way, and would like to remain a fairly tight, well-oiled machinery to support the sector. And lastly, to extend an invitation from our board that if the committee would find time to visit any of our projects, we would really welcome that opportunity so that we can interact under around specific projects. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Chair. I'll now open for comments, clarification from members.
Issue in the water issue.
So from your TCTS side, I'd like to know how you deal with the reserve budget in the short form. Because at the moment, you only half. So from the, your budget overview inside, or you receive during the year, I want to know how much for reserve budget you can get more, can you deal with this AMD issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm finding the financials a little bit difficult looking at it from a point of view of a graph instead of looking at a proper financial, you know, so going from page to page, because I don't seem to pick up administration costs for the OTCTA and how you operate or how you run your administration, where you're funding. I don't seem to pick it up anywhere from here. Also, from my own point of view, I'd like to know, once the project is completed, what happens to the completed project? Is it handed over to anybody, or does it remain your asset? And who is responsible for the repairs and maintenance, and what budget does that come out of? Thank you.
Thank you. Last year, we raised a concern about empowering emerging contractors. Because when we looked at your documents, you were only giving these big companies, Marais and Robert Pencil, and the others. And your chief executive told us that you are developing a model whereby each and every big company will take along an emerging company. But you haven't said anything about that today. So can you tell us as to whether have you implemented that model that we're planning to implement or what? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, for the questions. We'll go through the questions one by one, and I'll be asking the members of management to just add whatever I may miss out. And some of the questions may also need a comment from the department, because they may actually need the department's go ahead in many areas. Starting with the question around our intervention in the Donny Dam and in assisting the department. As we indicated, that we are a special purpose vehicle. And the nature of our operation then is that we operate based on invitation and mandates by the department. While we do have a relationship with the department and the department is aware of our capabilities, the department would like us to remain fairly focused and handling what has been given to us. So we do interact around any other area where we may be needed to come in as TCTA, but our coming in needs to be regulated in terms of our establishment and in terms of our operations within mandates that are issued by the department. But I should say that, as I indicated, the history that we started with one project and now we're handling about 5-6 projects, so that the relationship is growing and the department is pulling us in more and more in any projects that they see that we can add some value. So we will continue to nurture that relationship along those lines. The question was also around what projects have been completed. Two specific projects. The first one was a project that was basically part of our establishment, the Lesotho Highlands, that's one that has been completed, basically. And the other one is the dam project that was being done to supplement water to Cape Town. That is completely, that was completed and open and is fully operational. The one that is about to be fully completed, while it has already been operating and delivering water, is the fall augmentation scheme, which is the FRESA project. So we do have, particularly this year, a number of others that will be coming offline. So, and as we have indicated, that we've had a fairly good track record in completing all those projects within what was directed by the minister in terms of time frame and also of budgets. Contribution in terms of future plans, again, as an organization that was specifically brought in
with capabilities more on the raising of financing and implementation. We have been working more and more with the department to look at our involvement in any area of planning where we could add them. That is still more the domain of the department in terms of looking at future plans in terms of water security. But where we are needed, like we have started now doing, putting proposals around issues of desalination, because as we look at water demand issues going forward, we see that desalination will have to be factored in. So we have been proactive in some cases in putting proposals and suggestions and work with the department and integrating those into specific projects that can be packaged for implementation. I'll probably ask management to deal specifically with the discussions that are taking place between ourselves and the department around the asset mine drainage project and dealing with the issue of the shortfall. And I'll ask also the CFO to elaborate on issues of admin costs. And maybe I'll just touch on the issue on projects that are completed as to what exactly happened. At least from a project point of view, the arrangement has always been that projects would then be handed over to the department for the operation and maintenance phase. The management will touch on what happens from a funding point of view, as we have now a 20-year relationship of dealing with the debt, and the management will just expand a little bit on how that is handled in terms of the recovery of funding and the payment of the debt. Zodwa will unpack. She's got the information on empowerment of emerging contractors, but Chair, I can assure you that what was promised by the CEO is actually being implemented, and TCTA has actually, amongst other public entities, has been seen as a role model in pioneering that kind of a model where all the bigger contractors, which by the nature of the size of our projects, end up getting the tenders, but we then put in a requirement as part of the conditions that they empower at least two emerging contractors. That is something that has been relatively new in the public sector in terms of the procurement practice, and is being actually seen as setting a new trend in terms of empowerment. So let me hand over to you.
Thank you. With regards to AMD, in terms of the shortfall, the 433 versus the 900, where we are currently, we have an implementation agreement with the department, and we have obtained an advance so that we can actually start funding our costs on the project. And every intention is that we're working closely with the department to actually, in the next MPES submission, to actually be making submissions for more funding for the AMD project. With regards to the admin costs, all the costs that we incur are fully recovered from all of our off-takers. So the admin costs that we incur are recovered from the off-takers. What we do is we have a model where specific, if it's a cost that's directly related to that specific project, it will be charged to that project. But if it's a shared cost, for instance, your staff costs or leasing of the building, what we do is then we have a model where we apportion it to the current projects that we're busy on, and we basically do it based on the time spent on the project, and then have a recovery percentage to that project to charge them, for instance, 17% of the admin fee. And then in terms of what happens when a project is complete, the asset is then transferred back to the department. From a perspective of the O&M, sorry, I must correct that. It's not when the project is complete, when the debt is repaid, which would be normally 20 years after you've completed construction. So after that debt is repaid, then it would revert to the department, and so would all of the income streams. And then the operations and maintenance, once the construction is complete and it is in operations and maintenance state, the department actually takes over the operations and maintenance. From an enterprise development perspective for emerging contractors, yes, we do have a strategy where for every construction contract, the contractor has to bring on board two what we call emerging contractors, MNEDBs, and they have to take at least one of those and double their turnover over the period of construction. Now, we've also gone a step further, and we've actually made it a compulsory criteria. So any construction company coming in or tendering on our project, if they do not meet that criteria in the tender, they are disqualified. So that is illustrating to the industry that we are very serious about enterprise development. And looking and at the stats the COO provided earlier on, we're monitoring that enterprise development on a monthly basis on site to ensure that that is not just paper transformation. We're actually ensuring that the enterprise beneficiaries that have been nominated are actually the ones that are doing the work and benefiting from the contract. And what we also do is we have targets besides the two enterprise development companies that they have to bring on board. We also provide them, we also give them targets in terms of the spend on the contract that we expect to be on any enterprise development initiatives. So, Chair, we are very serious about transforming the sector, and the MNEDBs that we look at, we start at CIDB level 6 with the intention of developing these organizations so that in the long term you would have a higher number of disadvantaged firms that have been transformed into CIDB grading 9.
I just wanted to add that the list of the enterprise developed companies we did provide via the department, but we'll do it again. Those that have been attached to the contractor.
Chairperson, I just follow up for the CFO reply for regarding for AMC's budget. I think it's only your reply, I think the thing is that your budget is not a problem. Can reach to the 900 over 900 million, but from the your presentation, you say for the Vaal River system, if this salt load not removed, the 2014-15 will be fishing for the deficit for the AMD issue. So I just want to know from TCTA, you have the budget how you can prevent for 2014-15 for this system. If this source code is not removed, you will be fishing for the AMD issue.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to get clear. If in some projects whereby they said it was because of budget, I just want to get it clear. Is that the budget from the department or is that the TCTA? They don't fund where they know huge lump sum of money. They don't get involved. I just wanted to get clear if is that in that case. I'm not well conversant about it. Thank you.
Yes, just on the AMD, I think also, I'm not sure that Dr. Markham might want to add to this because he's heading the long-term feasibility study on acid mine drainage. But the department's planning, water resource planning, is the one that shows that if AMD decants or what we call neutralized, that is the directive that TCTA has been given by the department, which is to make sure it's not acidic when the water goes is put back into the river system. It's still got a lot of sulfate in, which is salt, and that will cause a problem. So the work that we are doing for the department will not solve the problem, and that's the study which is that the department is undertaking at the moment. In terms of the budget, that budget of $924 million covers all three basins, the eastern, which is around Nigel, central, and western. It is currently at the moment, the eastern basin, we can delay implementation because the water is still fairly deep. So that, the final strategies on how AMD is funded is part of the long-term feasibility study, which Dr. Mwaka, that will be complete looking about October, February, October this year, if they can speed it up. So it's currently at the moment we're looking and we're doing, we've done the Western Bay, we've got a work, a plant running in the Western Basin, and we'll do the Central Basin. But those plants will not stop the salt water going in the river as part of the long-term solution.
Chair, and on the questions on budget, I'm not sure I fully understood, but I'm going to try and respond. Where the budget is recovered is a social, it's a social project. We're recovering the budget of the fiscus. What happens there is we normally have implementation agreements or MOUs with the department where we have an arrangement in terms of how we're actually going to draw down on the funding or the budget as we need it. With regards to the commercial projects that we do, we would draw down on the loan facilities as and when we need it over the period. So I'm not sure if that answers you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm asking this question, Chair, because on your presentation you said that, I don't know if it's the pipeline, the infrastructure that goes to the community. Why I'm asking this question, I wanted to find more because I think the infrastructure to go to the community, especially the pipes that are left, it's not so long as you have already completed the ones that go to the mine, 30 point something. I wanted to, why I'm asking this question, I just want to find out, as sometimes the department has got its own challenge, don't you think that sometimes it's the social responsibility you have also to can give back to the community? That's why I was asking that question about the budget.
Another question, very small. It's a question of boreholes. Are you able to go and check as to whether the municipalities are doing what they're supposed to do? Because I'm asking this, as my own municipality, I was told that you are implementing this borehole project. But we haven't seen anything up to now. And we were told sometimes in January. But as of now, we haven't seen anything. So I wonder whether you just give this to municipalities to run with it, or you are able to check as to whether that's what they're supposed to do. Thank you.
Chair, I got another question. I just like the CCTA can get more detail for me regarding for your high infrastructure backlog for the water service. This is for by the your CCTA for the challenge. So I'd like to TCTA can submit this detail. How many for your this backlog for the hire for the infrastructure for service delivery? Thanks.
Chair, before they respond, I should think we have got the bigger project and the small project. Like when you talk about the borehole, it's a small project. And we've got dams, which are a bigger project. Can we be finished with an information of how many boreholes today they have up to this far? Because they are saying they are digging boreholes in a certain municipality. Which municipality is covered with boreholes in terms of boreholes? And which one is the next to assist in terms of boreholes? I just think that information is very imperative for us here to
occurred in this meeting. Thank you.
The first question, if I understand, Chair, is in relation to socio-economic upliftment of communities where infrastructure is being implemented. We've got a socio-economic plan around all the projects that we implement, where we have to ensure that the sustainable livelihood. Where we have to ensure that there's sustainable livelihood for the people that are going to be impacted by the building of a dam in particular. For instance, if I may take the completed project, the backwater project. During construction, we implemented or constructed about 80 houses, which were housing construction workers and local labor. When the construction was over and the project was sent back to government, those houses have now been made available to the communities in French Hook. We've also ensured that we train the skilled people that are around the area so that they can be employable in other projects that may come about in that area. So we've got a very clear target in terms of socio-economic development around all projects. The one, for instance, Moyumgeni, where we have to uproot and exhume graves. We've got compensation for that. We go as well as we do the cultural ceremonies that are supposed to be done when we exhume graves. We've established social communities around the area where all stakeholders have a say in terms of how the communities will be resettled. And there are compensation fees that we pay to the communities. We also ensure that, for instance, if farms, if our uprooting farms, those people get employed somewhere else. So we go further than just constructing the dam. We make sure that the people that have been impacted really have a future in other areas where they are moved. I don't know if I've answered the question appropriately. I don't know if that's what you were asking, Madam Chair. In terms of the Boho project, TCTA, as we said earlier on, our mandate is to implement bulk infrastructure. And this in the past has been your large dams, pipelines, tunnels. And this project came to us ad hoc from the department. I think earlier on we were asked, how do we utilize our skills for the broader sector? And this, I think, is a realization from the department that probably some of the skills that we've accumulated from the big project can be used for smaller projects. And it's a short-term project. We're given for a year. The boreholes, we've had to engage specialists to refurbish some of the existing boreholes. In some of the areas that were identified by the department. So we've been directed to specific areas. The project is coming to an end, and then we'll pull out. We have a number of boreholes that we've put up, new boreholes. Some have been refurbished. I'm just going to ask the team behind me just to pull out the number. We've got the number, just that I don't have it in front of me. But it's a specific directive. Go in, look at the specific boreholes, and pull out. That's all we're doing.
Okay, with regards to how do we know whether they actually have been done, the boreholes, and how we're monitoring the progress, what we do is we have appointed service providers in each of the provinces to take care of, to actually do the work, and we actually, they have to provide us with engineering signed-off certificates to verify completion of work before any payments can be made.
Just to end, give the total for all the six provinces. We drilled 91 boreholes and we refurbished 31. And those boreholes were identified between the municipality and the Water Affairs Regional Office. As the COO stated, they would tell us which boreholes to drill new boreholes or rehabilitate. And I think if I can ask your question, Chair, over why the project has been announced in your municipality, but then you are not seeing anything, we could give you details in that municipality of where the boreholes were actually put in. Yeah. Okay, yeah. And so they're still working in that area. But I think we can give you the details of that.
Chair would like to commit to giving a detailed information on the breakdown of the boreholes, province by province, and the municipality by municipality as well.
indicate that what informs our work is an acknowledgement of information that we do get from the department that there are still huge services backlog. The custodian mostly of that information would be the department, but we can get that information furnished to you, which just gives the detail of our understanding of the services backlog.
I wanted us to wrap up this one because we still have left with two CMAs and we have to be out of this place by 4:30.
No, Chair, I will be very brief. Chairperson, I am sitting with this tip book from TCTA. I wonder whether I will be getting. In fact, firstly, is this your master plan for delivery of projects? And also, will I get your priority needs within this document, or is something else that I can get somewhere, or will be? It will be part of your detailed report that you are talking about. Can I just be clarified and should be my last comment or question?
It is indeed a corporate plan, which we are required by the Department of Water Affairs to submit on an annual basis. It's a three-year program, so it will detail all the key objectives that we intend to achieve over a three-year period. From 2012 until 2015. It also indicates the vision going forward in terms of the likelihood of other projects and activities that we think the department can think of giving to TCTA. So it outlines the intended business model for the organization. So to answer directly your question, indeed you will get all the answers in the plan.
Thanks, madam. Regarding the invitation, we still wait for our response. We invited us to Lesotho. So we're still waiting for the date. Nothing. But you're still inviting us again. You see, members will walk to Lesotho because we are not coming up with anything concrete.
Thank you, Chair. We will liaise with your secretariat then with regards to the date. That invitation is still very much open. Not only the city, as I indicated, all the other projects that are still being implemented, they may be even more interesting to look at. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deputy Chair, and your team. Oh, Ms. Mate?
The Lesotho Highlands Commissioner was in the department. The matter was raised with her last week. She has given us an indication that the trip, they will prefer the trip is in August. Our DG's office will be communicating with your secretariat. We're trying to get 3 days. We'll ask the committee to accommodate them for 3 days because they will need time to drive around. It's quite a distance between the dams. So we will be arranging that. It's in August. Yes.
Thank you very much. And thank you once more for your presentation. Members, do we need the break or continue?
Break.
How many minutes break?